Okay, 6:30 is upon us, and the participants are already in waiting for us. On deck this evening, we have Dr. Keir Ford St. Hill. She'll be your host this evening, and she has her guest lined up already. So let's waste no more of her time and go over and say pleasant evening to the good doctor and her guest as well. Good evening, Doc.
Good evening, Gregston. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad at all. Good to see you again. You promised you'd be here last week, and you're here this
week. I did. I can't make those promises next week, though. But yeah. So welcome to our listeners. We're glad to have you on with us again. Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, which is aimed at raising public awareness of common health issues that affect us all. As Gregson rightly said, my name is Dr. Keir Ford St. Hill, and it is my pleasure to be your host this evening. We are looking forward to an engaging and interactive session this evening, and I take this opportunity to remind our listeners that you can contact us with your questions and comments either by calling us at 434-1790, or you can send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862, and Gregston will feed those to us. The discussion today is going to be centered around the National School Nutrition Policy. And this is our attempt, along with the Barbados Childhood Obesity Prevention Coalition and BAMP, Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners, to sensitize parents and guardians in anticipation of the upcoming school year. I have two wonderful guests with me today, and they are Professor Margaret Ann St. John and Mr. Brian Payne. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I am so happy to have both of you. And let me just tell our listeners a little bit about you. I know that both of you were very modest and humble with your bios, but you deserve your flowers. So Mr. Brian Payne is currently serving as the Deputy Nutrition Officer at the National Nutrition Center. In this role, he offers technical support to the dietary departments of government-operated long-term care facilities, including Her Majesty's Prison at Dodds and various district hospitals. Brian holds two master's degrees, one in nutrition, physical activity, and public health from the University of Bristol, and another in human nutrition from McGill University. Brian has also completed fellowships with prestigious organizations such as the World Health Organization, Nutrition International, enhancing his global perspective on nutrition and health. Currently, Brian is a fellow with the Eastern Caribbean Health Research Outcomes Research Network of Yale University. In addition to his work at the National Nutrition Center, Brian serves as the deputy chairperson for the National HIV/AIDS Commission. He is also a member of the National NCD Commission. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you.
And Professor Margaret Ann St. John. Now, I know many of our listeners would be very familiar with, I guess at that time, they probably would have just known her as Dr. St. John, but we have upgraded that to Professor St. John. She is a proud Queen's College alumnus. I can attest to that, though I did not go to school there. I feel that QC can owe their pavilion almost single-handedly to Professor St. John's fundraising efforts. And she was a QEH consultant for 4 decades, being the head of the department for 10 years, and contributed significantly to the development of the pediatrics department and served as an honorary consultant in pediatrics. She became an honorary professor of child health in the Faculty of Medical Sciences at Cave Hill campus from 2010, teaching pediatric skills to undergraduates and postgraduates pediatrics as well, also serving as local and intercampus re-examiner. She has presented and authored over 150 peer-reviewed articles, is an international journal reviewer, and has and received multiple awards for her research and service to pediatrics. She has served as a volunteer medical advisor and crew member to the Royalty Children's Charity in Barbados for several terms and serves on other local children's charities as a resource person. She serves as a, this is very important, volunteer medical director of Youth Health at the Heart and Stroke Foundation Barbados. She is a co-founding member of the Youth Gym at Heart and Stroke Foundation and leading policy champion of the Barbados Childhood Obesity Coalition from inception and was recently elected as the chairperson of the coalition. Her passion and energy remain focused throughout contributing towards improving the quality of health and life for the children in Barbados. And in the last decade, prevention of childhood obesity and NCDs in Barbados. She is a strong supporter for the intervention and implementation of the Barbados School Nutritional Policy to promote healthier nutrition as being one of the rights which the children of Barbados are entitled. We are very, very, very glad. And I just want the rest of Barbados to know Professor St. John, not dating her, but she did say that she was a consultant for over four decades, and she, I owe my healthy life to her, as well as she was my pediatrician growing up, as well as many, yes, as many of our listeners, I am sure. So this evening we're going to talk about obesity in children and the school nutrition policy, because that, you know, things were a little up and down with school last year, right? But we had our first, like, really solid from February last year, solid going in-person attendance straight from now. This is probably the first, like, normal term for a lot of children, normal school year for a lot of children and for a lot of parents. Now, obesity in children is a concept that a lot of our listeners may not necessarily be 100% believers in, because, you know, culturally, we have this belief that children should be, it starts from babies. No, everybody wants a baby to be chubby. Everybody wants a baby to have rolls and fats and fat and squishy. And they don't think that the baby is eating enough or drinking enough if they're not. So Professor St. John, could you just tell us what is obesity, especially as it comes to children, and why it's important for us to understand this concept?
Well, Kale, thank you for that kind introduction. I didn't even remember that I was your pediatrician. My goodness.
Yes.
Dating me. And certainly, obesity is a word, a medical term. However, looking at it, there are standards for height and weight from the time a child is born. And there are guidelines, average, there is a low range and there is a higher range and the mid range on what we call a bell curve. However, it's a measurement which is determined by your weight for height, basically, without getting into any details. So we have standards there. And the standard that you want to have is 25 or less. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter your age, you have certain standards of weight and height. And as you were saying, that the I and the Caribbean culture and many cultures is that the child has to be fat and juicy looking, cheeks and legs, and they have to eat a certain amount, otherwise they're looked at that they're not eating enough. Picky eater is a very common phrase used by parents when they come by. You have to find out what they mean by picky eater, and sometimes they're overestimating the size that the child should be normally. However, the non-communicable diseases are killing us early. And the NCDs, which is the abbreviation, are responsible for 8 out of 10 deaths in Barbados. In fact, 1/3 of our children, 1 in 3 walking around, is considered overweight and obese. And this is paralleled 2/3 of students drinking a lot of sodas in particular in their everyday diet. And it's been estimated that 60% of the country's health budget is used up by NCDs, and the direct and indirect economic cost of NCDs in Barbados exceeds $375 million annually. So we have morbidity, we have mortality, and we have a terrible economic impact because of the NCDs and OBC being one of them. Yes. So why are we concerned about the NCDs? Mm-hmm. Well, the NCDs have a potential long-term outcome. They have direct links with shortened lifespan. The prevention is far better than cure and a tremendous impact on the economy, surpassing anything that the administration puts in every year for the health budget, linked to the high in salt, high in sugar, high fat, and consumption of processed and ultra-processed foods. And I'm sure Brian is going to have his opportunity to talk a good bit about that.
Yes. Thank you so much, Professor. So Brian, I want you to jump right in now, because time gets away from us so quickly. And some children have already started school. Some of the private schools have already started, and some are starting this week. But the majority of schools are starting a week from now, and I know parents will be planning. So what is this national school nutrition policy? Because some parents are probably like, I don't really understand what's going on. And we know some, grandparents are the ones that maybe are listeners, and they're responsible a lot of the times for the nutrition of the children because parents are busy and working. So help our listeners who are caregivers to understand what the policy is and why it was formulated in the first place.
Sure. Again, thanks for having me. The Barbados School Nutrition Policy is, it provides an overarching framework to really modify the school food environment. As mm-hmm. Professor St. John would have mentioned, the school food environment used to be one. I think things are changing significantly now. But it tends to be one where there's lots of ultra-processed foods and high-sugar beverages. So you can imagine that children spending roughly 6 to 8 hours within the school setting, and they're constantly bombarded, whether it be by the high-sugar drinks, ultra-processed snacks. And in many instances, within some of the school environments, they're not these so-called healthier options for children to actually exploit. So the school food environment, so the Barbados School Nutrition Policy, it really gives school administrators a guideline in terms of what are the best practices to improve the school food environment, whether it be through providing healthier snacks, providing healthier beverages, increasing the opportunities for active play. So it's a whole host of things, and the policy is very comprehensive.
So a lot of persons have actually said that the obesity problem has nothing to do with the children's diets, but their lack of physical activity. So what are your thoughts on this?
I mean, I think obesity is a very complex condition. I think it's described as, in some instances, as a NCD. But I think we must not forget, or we must understand the connection between food and behavior. I often tell parents when I work in the clinics more that taste preference in children can begin from a very early age, early as 1-2 years old. So when I would be at the clinics and I would see a child maybe consuming a high sugar beverage or a prepackaged snack, or even some of the infant formulas which are very high in sugar. So a parent is actually priming their child or their ward to actually prefer these high sugar, high fat, high sodium foods, which in turn can increase the risk of obesity. And again, obesity tends to be something that we may point to because it's visible. But when we talk about things like elevated cholesterol, elevated blood pressures, we see all of these things in very young children. And I'm sure over the past many years, Dr. St. John has seen these things increase significantly in the children that she would encounter.
Yes, and you bring out a very good point, Brian, because I think when the public hears about the National School Nutrition Policy and they hear about the the ban on the sugar sweetened beverages, they think all they think about is the child being overweight or obese, but they don't realize that obesity, how complex, as you said, the diagnosis of obesity is, or disorder, because it is, of obesity is. And the fact that you may also have a child who, by society standards, it's normal size and weight and height, but still very unhealthy because of their diet. And Professor St. John alluded to a lot of those consequences of that when in her opening remarks. So I hope that our listeners are paying a lot of attention to that, because somebody might say, well, high cholesterol, what does that have to do with my children? Children don't get high cholesterol, but they do. And Professor St. John can probably attest to what we are seeing changing in terms of the non-communicable diseases with our younger population in the children and adolescents.
Yeah, if I can take you up a bit more on what you said, Keo, the parents saying that they can exercise away, they need more exercise. It's multifactorial, as Brian said. You can never do enough exercise to counteract what you're taking in. And the obesity being very complex, because it is a fivefold increase in heart disease, then there's chronic lung disease, there's cancers, there's diabetes, mental health problems, and almost all the organs in the body are affected. And what we're trying to do is to have a platform where it's fair and level for the children, so that in 20, 25 years, that they don't experience dementia, stroke, heart disease, kidney disease, asthma, cancer of three types, that with polycystic ovarian syndrome, infertility, all these conditions. They don't affect the children, but they affect you after you're 20, 25. So it's a prevention and a long-term effort that you're making by initial. And we say, do not add sugar, do not add salt to the baby food. Don't taste it, just feed the child. Because the sugar surge is a serious condition. In fact, statistics show that Barbadians consume three times more sugar than the global average. I know we're a sugar-producing country, but we do. We have the evidence there. It's not hearsay.
Yes, we do. I remember when I think the first, you know, culturally, that's how we grew up, right? So because we put sugar in our dumplings. We put sugar in, excess sugar in all of our drinks, even the homemade drinks that we make at home. And I remember when I went to university, and then being exposed to foods from other cultures, you know, and how my flatmates were preparing foods, I remember thinking, but these dumplings taste funny. But it was only then, you know, and I mean, I was an adult. I mean, 18 to 20 at that point. So it really is something that we need to change in terms of our culture, because it's so ingrained in us. As you said, we are a sugar-producing country. But we need to be using it to make the money and not to cost us more, because, as you pointed out, how much money we have to spend on treating the NCDs. So sugar, I heard both of you mention sugar definitely is one of the big things that we're trying to, excess sugar consumption is one of the big things that we're trying to tackle. But what else is the policy? What else in the diet is the policy trying to look at?
The policy really addresses, I guess, meals in general. I think the policy really stipulates that beverages which comes into the school setting should have no added sugar, and that's important. So it should be some kind of 100% juice or some kind of water, whether it be still or sparkling. So that's the key thing. And again, I think the policy, again, based on the comprehensive nature of the policy really speaks to all aspects of the school food environment. Education is also very important in terms of where children, at least we hope that children would be exposed to education related to obesity, NCDs, healthy diet, healthy lifestyles as well too. And the idea is that monitoring and surveillance is also in the policy. So so we really would like to monitor the children as they come into school, as they progress, so that we can have an idea in terms of how these children are doing as time goes on. You know, so the policy really speaks to that. And the policy also speaks to in increasing the opportunities for play. And by play or exercise, we don't necessarily mean structured exercise, but we also mean recreational or any kind of incidental activity. So that is also very important too, because we can appreciate that most or many children are not necessarily athletic like the good Professor St. John was, But again, we appreciate that in terms of the Ministry of Education, Technology and Vocational Training, I think we really appreciate that there must be increased opportunities for, you know, for non-structured playing activity. So the idea here is that we kind of want to move away from the competitive nature of physical activity and ensure that everyone has the opportunity.
Yes, because that does manifest itself in the schools where especially when you're getting into the secondary schools, like if you're not an athlete or you're not in traditionally, you know, obviously a far removed from secondary school, no. But traditionally, if you're not an athlete or you're not on one of these school teams playing one competitive sports, then apart from the PE, the 40-minute PE session or 50-minute PE session that you might have once a week, there really wasn't much. There wasn't much of a push or to really have activity, physical activity. In fact, at many schools, many secondary schools, after you pass about third form, because PE became optional or non-existent unless you were an athlete. So I'm really, really, really glad to hear that the policy not only speaks to what we consume, but the activity of our children. And we're going to take a pause right now. We have a caller on the line. Hello, good evening.
Hi, great. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Bless you. Well, that's wonderful. Well, I love you for blessing me with your presence. I thank you that all my blessings come from you, and who you bless, no man can curse. Now, I have a couple of questions tonight. This is a very great topic, and let me thank Dr. St. John for being my pediatrician as well and helping me with my heart issues when I was a child. Of course, I've grown out of those allergies that I would have had. So my first question is, what is the role of allergies in the insufficiencies of the diet that a child would play in terms of what they can actually eat without actually getting the allergies or whatever, without actually getting these medical conditions, you know, these diabetes that they can't eat, healthy sugars such as fruit or anything like that, that would prevent them from having a normal, healthy 3-square-meal-a-day diet that they would have a couple of in at school. The other question I would have is, what is the key role in terms of not only the Barbados Nutrition Policy, but the Caribbean Nutrition School Nutrition Policy? Not only the Barbadian School Nutrition Policy, but the Caribbean School Nutrition Policy and Barbados upgrading to having maybe a dietitian school policy or an advanced nutrition nutrition policy from in the future. What am I saying? Well, as we look, we see that everything is changing. The children themselves are changing. The diet is changing. The food itself coming from the ground is not as nutritious as it was as when our grandparents would have been around. And obviously, the environment has changed very much so. With COVID as well, just to add that, we would have had the inactivity. So in terms of the aspect of the exercise, but not only exercise, but the actual upgrading of the policy and the children as they change and as what they actually get to eat in school change, as more people from the private sector come on, such as myself. I actually had a snack business one time, and it was healthy business. All the snacks and everything was natural and, you know, vegetarian. So I'm not asking the children to be vegetarian, but I'm just asking as the people from the private sector, entrepreneurs come through, in terms of that critical role for the children in a changing life where their children are going to have many more diseases as the school nutrition policy advances in terms of an advanced school nutrition policy or a dietetics school policy. And my other question, now, as we look to the change where we see that we have all this data and this history now of the problem, the current challenge and aspect of the diabetes, the obesity, all the other NCDs and so on, what can we do with this data in an effective way to enhance the efficaciousness of when the children actually eat so that in terms of that cause, the effect would be that the children are actually getting what is optimum for them, are actually, in other words, so that no children are left behind, because you would not, sorry, no child is left behind, because you would not, you may not be able to reach everybody, and even though the policy is in place, the school may not catch every single student, there are going to be these anomalies. So what can you do to help the anomalies in the system? And finally, in terms of the aspect of when you're talking about being, when you're talking about these diets, in terms of the more protein swap for carbohydrates, in terms of the children that may be more active and coming to school, which would have different dietary requirement needs in terms of how they eat, whether it be they may want more protein than carbohydrates, so they may want to add more nuts into their diet. They may want to add more the healthy nuts, the almonds or the walnuts or the pumpkin seeds and so on. Well, that's actually a seed. That they would be in a state where they're getting what they need, but not so much as it relates to the regular, because you know you have that regular proteins, fat, sodium, carbohydrates, and so on. But in terms of the specialized needs in the nutritional policy itself, where you would want a more protein, or say less fat, but you would want more, instead of polyunsaturated fat, the omega 3, the monounsaturated fat, the omega 9, based on that. So I want to thank you and have a blessing that you've brought healing to my soul, Charlotte, for your growth.
Thank you. Thank you for calling. And you have brought up quite a few themes, some of which are points that we actually plan to discuss. So that is quite plain, even though it seemed like you did ask quite a bit of questions. One of the questions that when I was speaking to Dr. Lewis, one of the things that we discussed was we need, and either of you can answer this, I guess it's probably particularly for Professor St. John. Will the, and the caller alluded to this, will the new nutrition policy have any negative effects on children with special medical conditions or special medical needs?
Well, first of all, I would like to say I'm so proud that this gentleman, this caller, has grown up to be what sounds like a very sharp citizen. He had me feeling like it was sitting an examination as he went on with all these questions. However, the one about allergies. Allergies are predetermined. It's on your DNA. And certainly, if people are allergic to various foods as they experience or they are tested, then you avoid them and just leave them out. So that is not going to likely contribute to the obesity where you develop. But the nutrition policy, school's nutrition policy, for those who are watching, logged on and afterwards, is available on the Ministry of Education's website. The total policy extends about 68 pages, and there's a condensed one, which is important, one pager, for parents to get a grasp of what it's all about in principle, but it shouldn't be adverse or negative. I noticed that in the press and social media, there's been quite a bit of discussion, but as we would term it, red herring discussion, this policy has very much a value. It's applicable for special needs. It's applicable for the average child. And what we need, in my view, very strongly is education reform. That 45 minutes a week is not adequate. The recommendation is at least half of an hour of moderate physical activity for everyone. And the built environment has influenced us a lot. Before, children would be running around, they're playing on swings. And particularly during the COVID, where students were sitting for 4 or 5 hours on a tablet or a cell phone trying to learn, it has not helped at all. So we have got to go back to the drawing board, and I'm happy education reform has been discussed and looking forward to some improvements in what we are offering the students. But Brian can answer a lot of the nutrition questions which the caller put forward.
Yeah, Brian, I would like you to actually, I guess, summarize for the listeners, the caregivers, what are some of the points because in the nutrition, the important points in the nutrition policy. Because what we see a lot in the media and social media is everybody focuses on the restriction of the policy without focusing on the benefit of this making overall healthy children.
Yeah, thank you. I think the key thing here that you mentioned, again, the benefits of the policy, the benefits of the policy are numerous. Again, it really speaks to creating an enabling environment for health-seeking behavior within the school setting. And I think that's the key thing. The policy, I know the focus has been on what children can and can't bring to school, what teachers can and can't do. But the key thing here in the policy is that both parents, teachers, and persons in and around the school environment should model healthy behaviors. So it's not about a teacher taking something from someone. It's all about modeling healthy behaviors and, you know, having setting that example of good health. And that's the key thing. It really speaks about nutrition education for the children. Ideally, we would love for nutrition education to be actually throughout the curriculum, but you know, whether it be biology, chemistry, math, you know, religious studies, the key thing here is that nutrition education should be there. And of course, the idea is to educate children about NCDs and the risks that they pose. And that's the key thing as well, too. And also, of course, it speaks a lot about physical activity, of course, increasing or improving the opportunities for children to be physically active. And again, my department, the National Nutrition Center, we have done significant work with the Barbados Schooling Service. And the key thing here is that we work with them to actually improve the quality of the meals. And what I will say here as well, too, is that a child may come into a school with this predetermined taste preference for whether it be some kind of fast food or some kind of prepackaged snack. So when let's say the school meals department, when they offer like a vegetable or fruit, in some cases fruit, believe it or not, you know, children will tend not to actually eat some of the meals that are provided. And these meals are nutritionally sound. And that's the key thing that's the last point I'll make on that.
Give our listeners an example of like healthy meals. If you happen to be a parent who has to provide meals for your child, like what are, because I know a lot of people are saying, okay, but what do I need to do, right? So like, what's an example or some examples of some things that you should be packing in your children's lunch boxes generally?
I think the cornerstone of any healthy meal it would be fruits and vegetables, you know. And yes. I think most Barbadians, I think the last survey that was done, the average Barbadian has about 1.5 servings of fruits and vegetables on a weekly basis. And the ideal situation would be at least 5 servings of fruits and vegetables on a daily basis. So our fruit and vegetable intake are significantly low. In terms of what they should pack in their lunchbox, I think President John would know this too. The Harvest Truck Foundation, they would just put out an extended list of healthy snacks and beverages for schools. So it was actually launched, I think, last Saturday was launched. So it's a very comprehensive list, and it really reflects in terms of the healthy options which are actually provided in Barbados. Again, and what a healthy, let's say a school lunch should look like. And the key thing here is that if a parent or a child may actually prefer food, you know, giving a child food on a daily basis is fine. A meal could be something as simple as a cheese sandwich, a peanut butter sandwich. So those things do count as well too. But the key thing here is that I would say the cornerstone of any healthy meal would be making sure that there's some kind of fruit or vegetable with the meal. And the key thing here, F is going to have a beverage, preferably a beverage which may be 100% juice, or water is also the best option as well.
So do we have... Go ahead, Professor.
If I could put in specifics to be devil's advocate, I'm sure a lot of people are listening and saying, well, we have this 68-page policy. They want us to feed the children healthy. But what does this translate to in practice for the students and parents? So two bits of information rolling out of the policy, which was rolled out last term, third term last year. the beverages to be sold, for example, instead of giving them sodas and boxed juices, which contain about 6 or 7 teaspoons, they say juice, but they really are flavored water, as we would say, with some kind of flavor. Yes. Beverages will be water. They have used to be once a week, Water Wednesday, which rhyme, Wednesday and water, but now it's changed and they're having 3 days of water at least. They can have 5, but encouraging that they must be 3 days of water, and students encouraged to drink water throughout the day during class, even if they require. So other things, coconut water, they harm the Barbados Childhood Obesity Nutrition alternates, water, flavored water. You can put 2 bits of cucumber or strawberry or cherry in the water, coconut water, sparkling water, 100% fruit juice, 100% vegetable juice, plant-based milk, which is soy, and reduced fat milk. So these are alternates. And then the snacks, mangoes, sugar apples, pawpaw apples, lightly salted chips, mixed fruit cup, popcorn, raisins and nuts, plantain chips, which are not added sugar. There are so many alternates, but what is found is that parents do not know what has, they're not going to look on the back of the package and see it says 300 grams of salt, because the print is fine and you're shopping at the supermarket, there is no time. So what the coalition has put together is this list, which will be available on the website of the Heart and Stroke and other areas, that parents can see what they can use instead of. And Brian didn't touch on this one, but what can you serve them? Breakfasts, which parents are given, sausages and salami, high in fat things to reduce these, corned beef. These are extremely salty. Alternates are tuna and water, egg, plantain, cereals such as oatmeal 3 times a week, good fiber. We have a lot of colon cancer in our community. It's high fiber, so, and put a little banana in it if they don't like it plain. So there's a lot of advice which is available for changing to healthy nutrition, as it were.
Yes, and as both of you pointed out, I think what is what needs to be improved is the education on how to prepare healthier meal options, because some people may never have even thought about putting banana or putting, cutting up the apple and putting it in the oatmeal. Most people just say, I don't like oats, I don't like porridge, that don't taste good. They have to put lots of sugar, lots of milk in it. But there, you know, you can spice it up with your cinnamon and nutmeg and a banana to make a healthier option, and it actually tastes really good.
Creative, yes.
Yes, we have to get creative with the foods, because we are at a critical point when it comes to non-communicable diseases in our population. The other point that I think we have to tackle when it comes to the foods is, generally, the average child doesn't eat necessarily a lot at one sitting, but we do have a culture of overpacking the plates and overpacking the lunchbox with lots of food, and parents and guardians being upset if the child only eats a quarter or a half of what is in the lunchbox. And I remember when my daughter first went into school, I remember her teacher saying to us, you know, they are small, their stomachs are small, do not send a lot of everything. You may send different choices, because we know children day to day may say, okay, well, I don't want those today, I want plantain chips today, but I don't want the popcorn. But don't send a lot of them, because they get overwhelmed, because they feel like they have to eat some of all of it, and then sometimes they don't. So what are, how can, is there information on the websites and from the Heart and Stroke on the portion sizes that children should be having?
I think that we are about to make some changes there. But generally speaking, the size of one's stomach, which is not expanded, is the size of putting your two hands together. And people are shocked. Parents are shocked when they see the little three-year-old just put the two hands together. That's the size of the child's stomach. And when you fill it up with a cup of milk, it comes back to normal size after an hour or so. But you keep stretching the muscle, and the muscle gives up. It keeps stretching and stretching. And these are the roots of some of the early causes of the child just eating and eating more and more. So that is why we advise that when you've put the food on the plate and the child doesn't eat all, then it means the little stomach couldn't hold anymore. Unless, of course, they had something to eat and drink within an hour before, and that is unreasonable to expect them to eat as well. But the children eat about five times a day. They have breakfast, lunch, dinner, and then maybe two snacks in between there. And they get enough calories, by and large, unless they have some illness which would get in the way of their absorption and cause them to not grow to healthy weight for age.
Okay, Doc, let me just interrupt you here for a second before you get back to your guests, who are no strangers to the Better Health Radio Show, by the way, just in case people didn't recognize. Yes, these are very, very popular guests here, the professor and our good guy, Brian Payne, who has a very famous name. I keep telling him that, Brian Payne. Anyhow, this is the query here for you. It says, good evening. The nutrition policy speaks of no added sugar. Why is the ministry itself serving sweetened soy milk to students at primary schools? It goes on to say, why not recommend X amount of sugar per liter or grams to grams of product? And then they cap it all off by saying, why doesn't the policy mention the words balanced diet? Any comment?
That's Brian's baby there.
In terms of the ministry serving sweetened soy milk, I'm not sure of that, because again, the milk served at schools generally should not have any added sugar. And I think that's the key thing, whether it be soy, whether it be milk from the cow. I think that's the important thing. And the idea of balance, a balanced diet being actually in the policy really speaks to having balanced meals or complete meals. So I would hazard a guess to say that would be included in the policy itself.
And there's a common comment that, now that the caller mentioned the balanced diet and the alleged sugar in milk provided, there's a common comment on social media that children need a little sugar, and therefore the removal of sugar sweetened beverages in schools is unnecessary. So what are your thoughts on this, even though I think we kind of discussed that?
This idea of added sugar, because I mean, you get sugar from fruits, you get, when once carbs are digested, they're broken down into glucose and other sugars as well too. So this idea that people or children need sugar to survive, it's just one of those. There's no scientific basis for it. I think that's the important thing. You must remember that if we consume fruits and vegetables, we get sugars naturally, but the key thing here in terms of within the Barbadian context is that we just consume too much sugars, and these sugars are primarily from sugar sweetened beverages, ultra processed foods, and snacks as well. And the challenge here too is that these sugars, sodium and also fat and trans fats as well, it's from these ultra processed foods and these beverages, they actually displace healthy calories, or they displace healthy foods in children's diet. So you will see it. So again, when I work at a clinic more, you will see parents coming in saying, my child will not eat food. So I would then ask, how many snacks are these children, packaged snacks, are these children having on a daily basis? 3, 4, 5. And again, a child's stomach is very small. So if they consume some kind of sugar-sweetened beverage and several prepackaged snacks, of course they're not going to want to have food again, because they're going to be consuming excess empty calories. And that's the key thing.
Or if I can add for that message there, almost everything you eat and drink contains sugar, barring water. if you eat oatmeal, that has basic sugar. It's carbohydrates broken down into sugar. What we're talking about is the added amount of sugar that people are having. And some of those drinks contain about 15 teaspoons of sugar. Now, which parent, which is well-meaning, would put 15 teaspoons of sugar in a glass of water, stir it up, and give it to the child? So this is what we're talking about, added sugar.
And I'm not sure if, I am sure that you guys have encountered in practice that there are quite a few adult Barbadians now that you say added sugar, and the fact that we have sugar from fruits and vegetables naturally, and the whole concept of the food groups, it's actually foreign to quite a few people. And this is why I am glad that we're having this conversation about the policy, because the policy does not just speak to what you can and cannot eat, but it speaks to education about healthy foods and healthy lifestyles, because there are persons who, for the first time, understand here when the doctor says, well, you need to cut back on your carbohydrates, and they say, well, what are carbohydrates? What are these? What are that? And they do not understand the concept that carbohydrates translate into sugars as well. They don't understand. They just think, okay, well, if I'm not adding sugar or adding, you know, salt to this, they don't understand the natural content of some of the foods that they're consuming.
Yes, the complex carbohydrate versus the simple sugar. And the 12 points of the Barbados Nutrition Policy, which I have in front of me as the one pager for parents, it does say healthy, healthy meals, healthy snacks. It goes all the way through. So education, the educational aspect is very important, as you have emphasized, to understand what we're trying to get across with regards to healthy nutrition for the children.
Yes.
And if I could also add too, I want people to understand and appreciate that the Barbados School Nutrition Policy is not a standalone policy. The policy really is a component of a suite of public health tools that have been implemented to modify the food environment, not only within the school setting, but also within Barbados in general, whether it be ban on trans fats, whether it be ban on smoking in public places, whether it be things like front of package warning labels, sugar sweetened beverage taxes. So all these things work together to actually improve the school environment and by extension, the wider environment for Barbadians to live a healthy lifestyle.
One of the comments that I see commonly as well when you speak about healthy lifestyles in general is that the average Barbadian believes that this is a very expensive lifestyle to have. And if we listen carefully to some of the examples that Professor St. John provided in terms of the alternative snacks, what we would have realized is that a lot of what is being suggested is that we consume what we produce locally and not manufacture, but produce in our backyards, in the fruits and vegetables that are commonly grown and in season. So if you could just, either of you can comment on the, how can somebody on a budget, because sometimes you have to spell it out for them. There's some people who don't understand that it is possible for everybody to consume healthier alternatives.
I think this idea of healthy eating or eating on a budget, I think when people hear healthy eating, they automatically assume that it's going to be expensive. But the key thing here, or at least one of the first steps in terms of eating healthy, is of course buying fruits and vegetables which are in season or which are plentiful.
Yes.
And that's the key thing. Consuming more things like peas, beans, and lentils incorporated into meals as opposed to let's say things like expensive cuts of meat, for instance. You know, so that is also an important step. More peas, beans, nuts, and legumes. That's very important. But again, the in terms of the Beijing experience, is one where we actually love a large serving size of meat, fish, or poultry, and a large amount of carbohydrates. And that's the key thing. And I think this idea of an appropriate portion size of, let's say, protein, I think we consume two or three times the amount of let's say, fish or poultry or or meat that we should consume. You know, anywhere between 4 to 6 ounces would be considered a serving size of meat, fish, and poultry. But the average Barbadian may consume 2 or 3 times as much as that. And that's the key thing. Okay. And another component of healthy eating, or at least eating on a budget, it requires lots of planning, or requires some planning anyway. So I think long gone should be the days where you get up and you decide what you want to do. But the key thing here is to plan your meals accordingly.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have another caller on the line, Gregson.
Yes.
Hello, good evening.
Yes, go right ahead, please. The doctors can hear you, please.
Okay. I have been a diabetic for almost 30 years. And it is about a year and a half now that I am off diabetic medication. And I'm very happy for it. I have a plate of light fruit in the morning. And I have cut out fried chicken, particularly, but fried foods, mostly, from my meal. I have adopted a very nice meal regime, and also exercise. My feet are normal. They're not swollen, and I am doing very well. I can get out. I'm not a young kid anymore. I'm 78 years. I'll be soon 79. And I think I'm doing very well. Pardon?
I say you sound like you're doing very well.
I feel that diabetes can be turned into a 3 or 4 week health exercise. And I would be very happy to see, I can discuss with the doctors, not just one, any amount of doctors that would want to hear me. And we can kick diabetes. We can turn it into a 3 or 4 week experience where the length of time, during that length of time, we can adapt a new method of eating and an exercise program. And I think it will do us well. We can bring a drastic halt to the amputations that are had here in Barbados. It can be done, and I believe it should be done.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you, sir. That is a definite call. However, we are trying from the other end of the age group, which is from day one of life, to implement the preventive aspects. We know diabetes is multifactorial. There are genetic factors and other complex influential factors. However, we're trying to prevent, and this is why we are at, as you're saying, in the school's nutrition policy, they're reducing fried chicken 5 days a week to just 2 or 3 days a week, using convection ovens in the school canteens. We've been involved heavily with the vendors and the concessionaires of the canteens to try to have them to change what they're serving, healthy dishes, vegetables, fruit Fridays, change to 3 days a week in school. So these are things which we're trying to start early, because the diabetes type 2 is becoming epidemic even in teenagers and young people now, whereas years ago you did not see diabetes type 2 with that high prevalence.
That is very, very true. We have another caller who has slid in the last over.
Yes, good evening.
Hello, good evening.
Yes, hi, great evening. Very quickly, being very brief, just to note that as Dr. St. John and St. John had just said about the canteen, I actually worked in at my school canteen for approximately a year and some, and I would note that the
aspect of the children who only have their own choice at school, and outside of that on Saturdays and Sundays, that kind of thing is really the parents' choice. And my question is, very quickly, what can we do further in terms of so that on Saturday you don't defeat the purpose of the week by having, you know, the regular fast food and then Sunday, the big Sunday food? You would know that children always play a role in what they eat and what they actually want. And what we know all children, well, basically all children want today is that we can cheat. So how can you get rid of that in terms of the week and keeping it in this terms of the school nutrition policy? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is challenging. However, we find that the only way, one of the main ways, is to focus on educating the children to change their ways. And certainly the little 4 or 5 year old will tell the grandmother and tell the mother, my teacher says, or my school says, I must drink water with my meals. Things like that. We will not win 100%. And certainly we have seen across the social media, some parents saying, my child can eat what it wants. Why do you want to tell me what to feed my child? Now, of course, people have rights, but the child also has rights to good health under the UN Convention, and Barbados is a signatory of that. So you educate the child from young and hoping that you put them on the right footing, that they will have make wise choices as well.
Excellent. So we have just a few minutes left, and I'm going to give each of you a chance to make any closing remarks or any tips that you would like to leave with our listeners. And we can start, ladies first, with Professor St. John.
I would like to thank you for the opportunity and VOB to come and share some findings. Share our findings, and the evidence is there. We are not making up this information. Surveys have been done. A cadre survey was done on parents about what they wanted for their children, and they wanted an intervention by government, the ministry. They wanted healthier environment, food environment, better school meals, healthy water, accessibility of that they wanted. And then more recently, there was another survey done, which is given, it's what the people say. We go with what the people say and try to work with the canteen concessionaires, the schools, the parents, whoever wants to have a talk and a discussion open forum, because that's the role of the Barbados Childhood Obesity Coalition at this point in time.
So go ahead, Mr. Payne.
Yeah, and I just want to add quickly that, I mean, I think that you need to appreciate that the Barbados School Nutrition Policy was developed by a wide cross-section of stakeholders, whether it be the Ministry of Health and Wellness, Ministry of Education, Technology, and Vocational Training, Partners Drug Foundation of Barbados, Pan-American Health Organization. So, and it's grounded in, are rooted in science. And again, the policy provides an overarching framework to improve the school food environment. And I think it's important that parents, school administrators, canteen concessionaires, vendors, I think it's important that persons like myself as well, I think it's important that we continue to have this dialogue to educate each other. And the policy is an evolving document. So therefore, you know, let's say in a few years or whenever, things will definitely change to accommodate the current environment. But again, the school policy is something that we should definitely embrace.
Yes, and that was one of the, part of one of the questions that one of our callers had, which was in two ways. One, what are we doing with these statistics and the data? It helps us to develop the policy and further evolve the policy and adjust the policy. And that was another point about how things will be adapted as time goes on. And it will, as the data comes in, then we will adapt to too. And I say we because, you know, belonging to the medical community, we have signed on to the nutrition policy as well. So I am very thankful to both of you. I'm very grateful for you being here. And thank you to you again, Gregson. And I want our listeners to I hope that our listeners understand. In closing, I want them to understand that, you know, you look in the papers and we hear people on talk in everyday conversation and see on social media, people are very concerned that they're shocked at the number of younger persons who are dying, not from, you know, any traumatic situation or somebody taking their life, but quote unquote dropping down dead or having a short period of illness or actually having cancer or having strokes and heart attacks at younger ages. And all of this in terms of nutrition and a healthy lifestyle and physical activity from a young age, that being part of your lifestyle, is what can help prevent these things from happening. So we're trying to turn the page and change the narrative in the next 20 years, as Professor St. John said. So thank you all for being here this evening, and thank you again, Greg.
You are certainly welcome. And listeners, you can check us out again next weekend, God's willing, for another edition of the Better Health Radio Show. A good show as usual. Big thanks to Dr. Kira Ford St. Hill and her guests, Professor St. John, and of course, Mr. Brian Payne. Thank you all. Have a good evening, and I'll catch you guys. I'm not sure. Dr. Ford said she is not going to be here next weekend, so we'll look forward to somebody.
I said I can't promise.
Oh, you can't promise?
That's what I said.
Ah, okay. Well, if she is, we'd be happy to have her. If she isn't, we'd be happy to have whoever is coming next weekend. Thank you, Doc.
Yes.
Take care. Have a good evening, everyone. All right, there you go. You're welcome. The panelists there for the Better Health Radio Show.